south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, you know, at all my expat insider seminars, I have a couple of surprises. Well, at my upcoming seminar, which kicks off in about a month, starts January 6th, it'll be no exception. We've got, as announced, famous Bitcoin Dan, the world's experts on cryptocurrency, the guy that taught the very first university course on cryptocurrency and Bitcoin in the world. Yep, he came down to my second seminar about 5 years ago now, and he helped, or you could say kind of kickstarted, a number of seminar attendees and gringos and expats in the area, to the point that there's a vastly disproportionate number of Bitcoin millionaires within a stone's throw of the places we visit at the seminar. So there are plenty of gringos and expats down here in Central America who owe a great debt to Bitcoin Dan, who, when he first came down and started explaining to me about Bitcoin, I remember it was around 10 or 11 bucks. Oh man, those are the days, and it died 1,000 deaths since then, and now it's at 12,000 as I do this broadcast. Now, that's not to say like any commodity or financial instrument, it can't take a big hit too. Could easily take a big hit like it has in the past, took many hits, but it always seems to go higher next time. Hey, like I said, the cryptocurrency market is the Wild West, so if you're in, you need to have a thick skin, and as they say, ride 'em cowboy. But you know, sooner or later, it's going to find its market value. It's going to stabilize. Like other commodities, kind of hang there and not move much. But since we're in the very beginning of a brand new financial instrument class, you have to expect it's going to shoot all over the place. Now, some of you might be bored, but we really have to talk about this stuff. Why? Because so many people that come down to my seminar, as well as people who don't and just send me emails or come down with boots on the ground themselves, they want to know how to make a living here in Latin America once they've settled in and started their plan B. That's the million-dollar question for at least half of the people who come down. And the other half, with a big nest egg, who don't need to make any money. It's a funny thing, they usually end up doing some kind of business or charity work too. Hey, you know, you're going to have a lot of time on your hands, so you have to keep busy. Or as old John Galt would say, you either stay busy or stay drunk. And it's usually better to stay busy. So how do you do that, especially if you don't have a lot of money? Well, if you're going to do it the brick and mortar way, it'll take some time, you know. Oh, it'll be cheap, all right, compared to starting a business up in the first world. Probably a fifth of what it'll cost you to do the same thing up in the States. And the bureaucracy and permits, well, that's a lumbering process down here too, but also very cheap compared to costs in the first world. However, once you've got those permits and your doors are open, you might never have a visit or inspection from a government official again. But you know, brick and mortar businesses have their drawbacks. You're stuck at a location generally. You got to deal with the help and salaries, inventory, utility, security, rent, and all that. Then there's the easy way. That would be doing business online. And you know, at my last seminar, we had a very special guest, a man with a very interesting claim to fame. A Google Ads specialist who sold more than $100 million in products and services using Google Ads. In fact, he was number one with Google. Oh, and his presentation and stories thoroughly captivated my last seminar audience. And he put together a fantastic PowerPoint presentation that he gave out to everyone, showing them dozens of ways on how they too could make money on the internet. And with an internet business, your startup costs are nothing near what it would cost for a brick-and-mortar startup. Now, like I said, in the upcoming seminar, we've got Bitcoin Dan peeling the layers of the onion in the cryptocurrency space. And man, does he have some inside information on how that's playing out. But what about making money with cryptocurrency? There's a lot of diverse ways to do that. Well, that brings us to our next surprise guest. Another early seminar attendee. Very smart guy. He's been down here 5 years or so himself. He's another one who came down to the seminar and never left. He's promised to do a segment at the seminar too. Well, why would he do that? Well, how about this for a coup? You've heard of those cryptocurrency miners, you know, Bitcoin miners and such. Well, that's what he does. That's how he makes money. He's mining cryptocurrencies right down here. In fact, just a stone's throw from where I'm doing this show right now. So how did we get him on board for the seminar? Well, just a few weeks ago, I visited his house, and I noticed in his unused maid's quarters, A couple little boxes with fans and fins, about shoebox size. Man, they were whirring and putting out a lot of heat. And he said, I'm mining cryptocurrency. In fact, I'm mining a couple of the most popular ones, Ethereum, Litecoin. Then he went on to explain the whole thing to me. And he said he's got a couple of different online schemes where he makes money off of cryptocurrency mining and other things related. Then he said he was waiting for some more of those crypto mining hardware boxes. And right now he's setting up the electrical so that he doesn't blow any circuit breakers in his condo complex. So yes, he's making money a dozen different ways off the internet, off the cryptocurrency thing, and from being a miner. Cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin are very, very hot topics right now. Though most people don't own any, and very few people know of anyone who's actually used this stuff. Though it is catching on fast, I bet you never met anybody who's an actual miner. Well, you will at the seminar. Oh, and by the way, Oscar, the cryptocurrency miner, does not speak a lick of Spanish. You see, you don't need to in the cryptocurrency world. Though it certainly would give you a leg up if your clients happen to be Latin Americans. Bottom line, no matter where you are in your plan B, if you have to make some money once you land in Latin America and you have a very low startup budget, man, you won't want to miss our back-to-back speakers. That would be Bitcoin Dan and Expat Oscar, our local cryptocurrency miner. Yep, every neighborhood should have one. But they don't. Oh, they're out there all right, but they're rare as hen's teeth. Now, we've all heard about these Bitcoin and cryptocurrency miners, but you know, they're kind of an elusive and mysterious group of guys. Now, of course, you've probably seen pictures of gigantic Bitcoin mining farms where there's rows and rows and racks of hardware. That's the kind of large-scale Bitcoin and cryptocurrency mining you've all heard about. But I'm here to tell you, there are lots of different ways you can mine cryptocurrencies, and you don't need a big setup. And at the seminar, you'll find out all about that stuff from a guy who's actually doing it right down here in Central America and making money at it. Like he said to me just yesterday, Johnny, I'm going to tell him the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great about personal cryptocurrency mining and how to get into it and what to look out for and where you can really clean up. And like he said, you don't have to be a techie or a genius or even know how the hardware's doing it. But he'll get into all that, of course, at the seminar. So the point is, when you finally get down here and get that plan B going, if you need to make money, you won't want to miss these two guys at my next seminar. I mean, look, at least half the emails I get these days are from younger people wanting to get their plan B going, sincerely wanting to become expats. And since they're young and not close to Social Security or pension age, not yet anyway, they don't expect it to be there when they are. And you know, they all give me a version of, Johnny, you know, I got a decent nest egg, couldn't last me a couple of years down in Latin America, but I really do need to do something to make some money so I can keep on living in the style I'm accustomed. Then they generally ask me for suggestions, and I tell them, you'll never know till you get your boots on the ground down here. You'll see those opportunities with your own eyes. However, everyone knows where the big and easy money is these days. It's on the internet. At least easy in the respect that you hardly have to put any capital into a business like that. So, with all that money being made in IT these days, there's nothing like getting it from the horse's mouth, from expats that are already doing it. Yet another reason to come down to the seminar to get the inside track on how expats are making money down here too. Why do you think it's called the Expat Insider Seminar? And there's still time to sign up. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's seminar link, and it'll take you right to the information page. Oh, and once again, we'll be talking about lots and lots of things we just can't discuss on the radio or in podcasts. Why? Well, there's a lot of information we don't want the rest of the world to know. Oh, and why all this talk about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies? Well, because I get a lot of emails on the subject, more and more every day. And it's really not all about investing or speculating in cryptocurrencies, though that's part of it. It's more what cryptocurrencies can do for you. It's smart people and astute expats who understand it's very wise to get your assets out of the U.S. and first world countries and transferred into a foreign jurisdiction or foreign bank. From there, of course, you could buy assets, gold, real estate, boats, cars, land, open businesses, start brokerage accounts, whatever. Anyone with half a brain knows it's no good to keep big money in a bank. Not these days, anyway, when all first world banks are on the edge of, well, disaster. However, most people have to keep some cash in the bank, enough for a couple of months to hold you over in case of a catastrophe, like, for example, what happened in Puerto Rico. And what you're about to face up in the first world when the system crashes. Which is why it's also wise to have a couple of months of physical cash around, hidden somewhere in your house. And people who have foreign bank accounts or foreign investments know when they transfer money around, it goes through the New York SWIFT system and they take a giant chunk out of you. It takes 3 or 4 days. Whereas Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are virtually anonymous if you take precautions and your transactions clear practically instantaneously compared to banks. Even better, crypto transaction fees are minuscule compared to bank fees, and you can ship millions if you want without filling out reams of paperwork and going through that bank know your customer crap. In fact, you cut the banks out completely. That's why they hate cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and would love to see them die. But you know what? They've passed the point of no return. They're too big. They're here to stay. Notice I'm not giving you any investment advice here. That's what the experts are for. Like expat Oscar and Bitcoin Dan. Oh, and this will make you laugh. You know, at the last seminar when Bitcoin was around 2,000 to 2,500, that was last July. Well, some attendees got in at that price. After talking to some expat Bitcoin owners and Bitcoin Dan, he was at the last seminar too. Anyway, just recently I got an email from one of those attendees who'd made 500% on his investment in 4 months. First, he thanked me for having all those Bitcoin experts around and said he never would have gotten in had he not been in on those great discussions. However, at the end of his email, he had a caution. He said, "Johnny, you know what? Bitcoin is not female friendly." He said, "My advice, Johnny, if you're going to get into cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin or whatever, by all means, inform your wife or your other half. But if you try to explain everything and tell her too much, you could end up like me, getting into a fight almost every night for a while. Because you see, when I was at the June seminar, I bought at around 2,000. And of course, my wife knew it. And when it hit 4,000, time to get out, she said, we doubled our money in just 2 months. Fantastic. And I said, no, you didn't hear those Bitcoin guys at the seminar. They're thinking it's going to go up to 8 or even 10,000. Be patient. And she said, oh no, we've been through that before in other investments. Let's get out now while we're ahead. And you know what? It caused a lot of fights, but I held my ground. In fact, when it hit 6,000, she pestered me so much to sell. I said, look, here's the deal. We'll both get Trezor wallets. You can have half and I'll take half. You spend yours and I'll sit on mine, but that's yours to spend. Don't ask me for any of mine. So we got into that discussion, not just once, a number of times, and each time she walked off in a huff. And I won the argument, just barely. Let's see, wasn't it Mark Twain that once said, if you win an argument with your wife, the very last word you say is the first word of the next argument. And now that the price is hovering around 11,000, she's at it again, but happy as a clam as she plans our next boots on the ground, somewhat deluxe trip to Central America, because you know, Expedia takes Bitcoin. Johnny, if you think that just happened in my family, I've got a brother and another good friend here in my town. They both watched me get into Bitcoin and jumped right in too. And when I told them that story about my wife, both of them told me very similar stories about their wives. Yes, they got into arguments about selling Bitcoin early too. And my brother, he caved when Bitcoin hit 3,000. He took a big chunk out, he said, to remain on speaking terms with his wife. And now he's kicking himself and his wife is kicking him too, saying, I know I told you to sell, but if you just would have held your ground, so he can't win either way. Which is why our emailer said, Johnny, if you're investing in cryptocurrency, by all means, tell your wife or your other half. But be prepared, because females are not Bitcoin friendly. All right, meet Johnny here. Think he's got a point there. Still, that begs the question then, what about LGBTQs? Bitcoin friendly or not? All right, one more thing about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies before we move on. A lot of countries and banks hate Bitcoin. It disrupts things, you know, the way governments and banks have traditionally had everyone by the huevos. And cryptos, Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, sidestep all that. That's why they're called peer-to-peer, just you and another person doing a deal. Back to the purest and cleanest form of capitalism, which really doesn't exist in any other market today. Unless we're talking about bartering or rummage sales, where you want to buy something and you hand over the dough. No government or bank in between. Of course, now the US IRS even taxes rummage sale dough. Man, am I glad I don't live up there anymore. Anyway, since most governments and banks hate Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies in general, since they know if peer-to-peer networks like that get too big, it'll put them out of business, some governments have actually tried to outlaw the use of it. Though some forward-thinking governments like Japan have embraced it completely. In fact, there are 250,000 different businesses in Japan that take Bitcoin. And then you've got the 7 or 8 countries in the world out of around 200 countries that have banned Bitcoin completely. In other words, if you're caught using it, you could go to jail. Can you guess which ones they are? Number one, China, which did have the biggest Bitcoin exchanges in the world at one time, and everybody thought that might kill Bitcoin. It didn't. It took a nice hit for a couple of weeks, and most smart people said it was a time to buy on the dip, and those who did made a lot of money because it soon popped back and headed for the stratosphere. Same thing when that corrupt weasel Jamie Dimon said Bitcoin was a fraud. It took a big dip, another buying opportunity, and headed for the stratosphere again. Meanwhile, while that halitosified maggot-brained dickhead was making that statement, people at J.P. Morgan Chase's own corrupt organization were buying on the dip, behind his back. Or perhaps that was the plan. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, the countries that have banned Bitcoin and crypto. You've got China. Number two, Morocco. Who cares? Number three, Nepal. Who cares? Number four, Bangladesh. Too bad. Such a lovely place, Bangladesh. Number five, Kyrgyzstan. Oh, what a shame. There goes that Bitcoin beach house purchase I was so hot on. Hell, if you could even spell the place, you'd deserve a free Bitcoin. Number five, and this should concern us, Bolivia. Yep, in June of 2014, the Bolivian Central Bank banned any coin or currencies that aren't regulated by the government. Well, that doesn't bode well for expats living in Bolivia, but then again, they've got a tiny government and nearly half the economy does everything with cash, so obviously there's very weak enforcement of laws, which still makes Bolivia a pretty good place for expats, if you don't mind a heavy dose of Hugo Chavez-style socialism, that is. By the way, when you use cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin or Ethereum, whatever, how in the hell is the government going to find out about it anyway, unless you're actually mining it and have equipment set up? Unless someone tattles like a jealous neighbor, pissed off ex-wife or mistress, that's just not going to happen unless you consistently burn out the neighborhood power transformer. Otherwise, everything else is on the net, in the ether. All right, there's one last country that's banned Bitcoin and cryptos. Can you guess? Well, it's another nail in the coffin for Ecuador. So Ecuador's government announced in July 2014 that they will be banning Bitcoin and all other digital currencies, while that said they were going to lay the framework for their own creation of new state-run cryptocurrencies. In other words, the government can make its own crypto, but no one else can use theirs. Let the games begin. Good luck with that. Like I said, for expats anyway, another nail in the coffin for Ecuador. Then there's Venezuela. Unofficially, Bitcoin's sort of illegal. At least it seems Bitcoin mining is. Since there's been a lot of arrests and raids lately on Bitcoin miners, where the government, mostly cops, will come in and confiscate the equipment and the Bitcoin miner and use him to mine Bitcoin for them. Privately, too, usually in a cop's or bureaucrat's house. You've been hearing a lot of stories like that lately. All right, moving on. You know, a lot of you listeners want to come down to my seminar, but you don't have enough money or time. You can't work it into your schedule, whatever. So I know many of you come down getting boots on the ground yourself. Now, if you do that, it's just fine, especially if you got a lot of time in your hands and a nose for exploring. Of course, you won't be drinking from the fire hose. You won't get a head start on having your plan B here in Latin America, but you will meet people and it will make you feel more comfortable the next time you come down. That said, I get a lot of people who do phone consultations with me. You've heard me mention that before. Every one of them, of course, working towards that plan B. And in those phone calls, and I've done hundreds of them, I help people out with their own plan Bs, give them lots of options and suggestions, hook them up with people, places, and things they'd never find otherwise, give them some of my personal contacts and such, and many of them I hook up with the expat concierge service because they can pinpoint and arrange ahead of time exactly what you're looking for. Doctors, rentals, the right neighborhoods, schools, insurance, internet plans. They'll even hook you up with gringos and expats who have businesses, contacts you might need when you come back down the next time. It's true, a lot of people come down, do the boots on the ground thing themselves after they listen to some of my shows, sometimes a couple hundred of my shows. And most, when they do it that way on their own, will do a couple phone consults with me. For example, Dave, who just wrote this email. So, listen up. What he says is especially meaningful for those of you on a tight budget, who can't exactly go first class and don't mind roughing it just a little bit. Not backpacker style, a couple of steps above that. I mean, nobody wants to do that again. You got to be nuts broke or a university student to want to eat street food, sleep in a flea bag hotel, and share a bar of soap in a bathroom that's impregnated with pubic hairs that aren't yours. Yep, you got to have standards, and mine are a lot higher than that. But again, for those of you with a plan B who want to do it pretty much on the cheap but don't want to do it backpacker style, listen to this email. And again, I'll paraphrase, skip around, comment, and skip the boring stuff. Here goes. This is from Dave. He says, "Dear Johnny, I arrived at the Guatemalan airport May 18, 2017. It was the very first time I ever traveled outside the U.S. in my 49 years of life. I had arranged to live at a place you recommended, an apartment in Lake Atitlan, the most beautiful lake in the world, and was able to hire a private driver to take me there from the airport as I was nervous, a nervous expat for sure. I remember seeing Guatemala City, all its traffic, and how chaotic it was. It reminded me of a crappier version of New York City. All right, me, Johnny, here again. The Lake Atitlan region is a good 3 to 4 hours away from Guatemala City. And when you're driving through Guatemala City, you don't hit any of the real high-end wealthy neighborhoods, so you see none of the good stuff. All that's in the other direction, towards El Salvador." Then he says, "So as we travel to the lake region, I got to see all the things you talk about, such as top floors of houses not being completed, rebar sticking out everywhere. I was taken aback as we drove through Chimaltenango, as it just looked scummy. So when we got to the lake, I called the owner, and we met at a gas station, and we followed him to the apartment. By the way, let me insert here that the person, the gringo expat, from Florida, by the way, he too did a number of phone consultations with me and never came down to the seminar. He came down with boots on the ground, ended up in the lake region, and his idea to make money was to build a couple of apartments for gringos and expats, and that's why I hooked him up with Dave, because I know the apartment owner and landlord from those phone consults and meeting him personally, etc., and I know he was a good guy and did things right. Then, Dave says, I followed him to the apartments, and this is where I freaked out. I had to walk through a dirt path to get there. Along the way, I saw wild dogs and shanty buildings and piles of garbage in places. It reminded me of the South Bronx in the 1970s. It surely was culture shock. If I had a way to be helicoptered back to the airport, I'd have left that same day. However, meeting the owner was the best thing for me here. Remember, the owner's a gringo expat from Florida, perfect English and all that. He helped me get acclimated and took me around to the stores I needed to go, even helped me buy a motorcycle. I got to move to the top floor of his apartment, the one that faces the lake, so my view was of three magnificent dormant volcanoes. I stayed there for 4 months and got so acclimated to the area that I wanted to move to San Pedro, which is a little town on the other side of the lake. It wasn't till I moved that I realized how great my first apartment was with the expat from Florida. You see, for one thing, he's got whole house hot water with gas propane, which means I have hot water in both the kitchen and the bathroom sinks. Not to mention the water pressure is great there too. Other things I took for granted were counter space and natural light. The apartment I rented in San Pedro has zero counter space, a suicide shower, you know what that is, right? With the wires hanging out. And no hot water or pressure at the kitchen sink. Oh yeah, you know what else? My first apartment had something that no one else has. First world plumbing. Yes, you can flush your toilet paper down the toilets in his apartment. That was another culture shock for me when I first moved down. Now I'm used to that, and the suicide shower head too. And by the way, what he's talking about is a point of use electric hot water head on the shower. Pretty ugly, wires hanging out generally. Unless, of course, it's installed by a knowledgeable gringo. Then it'll be nice and, well, odd looking, but of course they do look odd. But no noticeable electric wires wrapped around it or hanging out. Now remember, we're talking about pretty low budget here. Not backpacker style, but not first world as you and I are used to it. And when he talks about not having hot water at the sinks, well, no middle or lower middle class Latin house has hot running water in the house. That's why they use those point of use shower head heaters. That's the only place there's hot water. Then Dave says, as life would have it, eventually, I was dating one of the neighbors, so I got to go back and take showers in that apartment and really got to make some comparisons. I highly recommend that first place, Johnny, that you told me about. The apartment makes the transition easy, and the owner's help makes assimilating very easy. Now, I consider him a friend and will stay in contact with him when I get back to Florida at the end of January. You see, I'm a new grandfather and have to go back and deal with that. No congratulations, please. The story sucks. My son knocked up a stripper and every white trash story you can imagine has already happened. She's even been on Jerry Springer. Oh, man, you can't make this stuff up, huh? So anyway, Johnny, I want to thank you for recommending him to me as it made my time here wonderful. My original plan of staying here for 6 months while I saved money went to the wayside, and I was basically on a long-term, very nice vacation on, I might add, the most beautiful lake in the world. I've even extended it by 3 months. If I didn't have a grandchild, I probably would never leave. Anyway, Johnny, I hope to meet you sometime if you're ever in the area. I was hoping to meet up with the next crop of your seminar attendees, but I may have ruined that. Last time I met up with one of the expat concierge ladies and we met, and I hate to say this, Johnny, but I was so enamored with the anarchy of Guatemala, I wound up helping a gringo get some weed. In hindsight, that was pretty dumb. But I was so excited to be here and on a mental high. So if you speak to your concierge lady, please tell her I'm sorry about that. I was out of line and I know that. Oh, and for your information, Johnny, the owner you recommended is building another 2-unit building, and of course he's keeping it up to first world standards. It's also in a better spot, as the original one is right off the main street and is kind of loud sometimes because they're doing some construction and all the traffic moves through town and comes past that road. Although the chicken buses blast by and honk horns at 6 in the morning, I'm sure this will return to normal after the construction ends, whenever that might be, because you know here in Latin America, they're on mañana time. Anyway, Johnny, thanks for everything, the great advice, the great hookup. Dave, signing off with Sunrise and Rebar here in San Pedro. Right smack on the most beautiful lake in the world, 6,000 feet above sea level, with a million-dollar view for $150 a month. All right, there you have it, from a guy who'd never been out of the U.S. before. Dave wanted to start his Plan B on the cheap after doing just a few phone consults with me, so I hooked him up. By the way, I never met Dave face-to-face. We've only spoken over the phone. And about that somewhat embarrassing little weed incident Dave's referring to, that's the first I heard of it. Anyway, little by little, they're legalizing it all over the place, so who am I to judge? Though the bottom line on that story is not about pot, it's about the fact we've got one happy camper living on the most beautiful lake in the world, paying $160 a month for a million-dollar view. Hey, what's not to love about that? You got a Plan B yourself? What are you waiting for?
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.